Hello, everyone. Welcome to the International Society for Pharmacoeconomics and Outcomes Research, known as ISPOR, Student Chapter Podcast Series. My name is Nathan McClure, and I'm a PhD student at the University of Alberta School of Public Health, and I'm collaborating with the University of Calgary Student Chapter to present conversations with individuals interested in understanding and informing healthcare decision-making in Alberta and abroad. The title of today's podcast is Measurement of Health-Related Quality of Life, with our guest speaker, Dr. Fatima Elsaya, who is a research associate with the Alliance for Canadian Health Outcomes Research in Diabetes, or CORD, research group, as well as research manager of the Alberta PROMS and EQ5D Research and Support Unit, known as APERSU, at the School of Public Health, University of Alberta. So let's get started. Hi, Fatima. It is a pleasure to have you. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much, and thanks for having me.
Okay, so I have a list of questions here, and we'll get started on question one. How did you become interested in the measurement of health-related quality of life?
Well, my first introduction to the field was actually in 2009, when I took a course on methods of health-related quality of life measurement, and that was during my PhD studies. I currently actually teach that course. At the time, my research focused on health literacy and health outcomes in the diabetes population, and because the course spurred my interest in health quality of life, I eventually ended up exploring health quality of life in the diabetes population. I was also interested in the methodological aspect of health quality of life measurement, so I have done and I continue now to do research around measurement properties of instruments, various instruments, as well as their application for various purposes.
Okay, great. Well, that's quite the background. And I've also taken a course here at U of A in measurement. So I strongly recommend to any listeners, go out and take a course to become more familiar with this topic. But can you explain what health-related quality of life is to our listeners and why this is important to measure?
So generally, we define health-related quality of life as the impact of health status, so whether you're healthy or ill, on the overall quality of life. So it's a multidimensional concept that includes domains like physical, mental, emotional, and social functioning. And there are many approaches to measure health-related quality of life. One of them is what we call preference-based measurement. This means that the measurement of health rate quality of life combines both an individual's health status, which is defined using, you know, different descriptions of health dimensions, so your physical, mental, and social health, as well as in the preferences of that health status in one score, which we typically call an index score. So this score is anchored at 0, which means dead, and 1 for full health. The advantage of this approach of measuring health quality of life, which is the preference-based approach, is that we can use these index scores that are generated from these measures to calculate what we call QALYs, or quality-adjusted life years. And the concept of a QALY is very simple. It combines both quantity and quality of life. But its significance is that it takes us beyond examining whether an intervention or a drug improves, just clinical outcomes or longevity. It actually incorporates how an intervention might impact the quality of life of an individual. So we're going beyond, you know, typical endpoints that we look at in clinical effectiveness research. And this is very important because quality of life is also a patient-reported outcome. So this is the kind of the key benefit of using a QALY. Of course, there's a lot of other benefits, it being, you know, a common metric that we can compare across different clinical areas or different interventions as well.
Okay, great answer. I guess according to the most recent guidelines from the Canadian Agency for Drugs and Technologies in Health, CADTH, it states that estimated utilities that reflect the preferences that are representative of the Canadian general population should be used in the economic evaluation of health technologies. So, according to your familiarity with these preference-based measures, is this possible to achieve with available health-related quality of life instruments? And then, I guess that my second question would be, why use preferences of the Canadian general population as opposed to the preferences of patients who are receiving the treatment?
All right. So for some preference-based measures, this is achievable in Canada. So for example, you have the EQ5D instrument, which is one of the most commonly used preference-based measures in the world. We have in Canada, Canadian value sets or preferences from the Canadian general population for both versions of this instrument, the 3L and the 5L. So this could be definitely used. There's also, this is also doable for the other commonly used instrument in Canada, the HUI, Health Utilities Index. Although there might be some issues around the preference value set, and there are arguments that it might not be fully representative of the general Canadian population. The other commonly used instrument is the SF6D, which is typically generated from the SF12 or the SF36 instrument. We don't have yet a Canadian value set for this tool. There could be some, mapping solutions. I know there's also currently some work to develop a value set for that instrument, but it's not available as of today. Regarding your second question about why we should use preferences of the general population and not those of the patients who are receiving a treatment, this is actually a very controversial topic in the field, and there are different arguments to support sort of either approach, whether using population preference or patients. So the general approach, not only in Canada, but also in other countries, and it's typically required by regulatory agencies, is to use the general population preferences. So if we think in the broader context of why we do these economic evaluations, it's typically to explore whether a new technology, whether it's a drug or a device or any other new technology, whether it's cost effective. And what we mean by that is whether the extra dollars, the extra money that we're spending on this technology are worth the benefit that we are getting from it. So we all know that healthcare budgets are limited and we can only fund a certain number of technologies. So these economic evaluations help decision makers make informed resource allocation decisions. And so where were we going to spend the money based on the, maximum benefit that we get from the interventions? So when we think about these budgets, at least in the Canadian context, where we have a publicly funded healthcare system, the taxpayers from the general population are actually funding healthcare through the taxes that they pay, right? So the preferences of the general population, logically should be considered in how we spend this budget. So this is kind of the argument why we should use preferences from the general population, or probably the most prominent argument. However, we can also argue against this because we can say that the general population have not experienced certain health states. So how can we, trust, or how can we, ensure that the values that we're getting from them regarding certain health states are actually valid values for these specific health states? So for that, it might seem more reasonable to use preferences from the patients who have experienced a certain health state or who are receiving a certain treatment or an intervention. And this is where the kind of the counter argument comes from. However, also there are issues with using preferences from the patients themselves. For example, you can think of in certain situations, patients might overestimate the benefit in reporting the value for certain health states. They might overestimate the benefit that they're receiving, from a drug or a new technology or a new treatment because they want that new technology to appear cost effective, because they want the patients like them to receive that treatment. There are also other issues, especially in patients with chronic conditions who might adapt to their illness, and their experience over time with their illness might change, and that impacts how they value that specific health state. So there are a lot of arguments and counter-arguments, and this continues to be one of the most controversial questions probably in this field of work, for sure.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, it was a good one then. So you mentioned earlier that measurement of these preferences for health states allow for the calculation of a quality-adjusted life year, or QALY. I have come across the statement that a QALY is a QALY is a QALY, sort of suggesting that all QALYs are equal. Can you explain what this means?
All right. So this is, you're asking all the controversial questions actually today. So this is another big controversial issue in the field. And it is one of the key underlying assumptions of the concept of equality, that equality is equality is equality. And the idea here is that equality is kind of a context-free element. It doesn't matter who gains it or who loses it. So, for example, if we think about the QALY as a unit of, health improvement, a QALY gained by a newborn is equivalent to a QALY gained by a 70-year-old man under this assumption that we're talking about. Also, for example, a QALY gained by a person who has stage 4 cancer is equivalent to a QALY gained by someone who only has hypertension or maybe milder health state than or health condition than a stage 4 cancer. Similarly, a QALY gained by someone who is from a high socioeconomic status is equivalent to a QALY gained by someone who lives in poverty. So under all of these different contexts and circumstances, a QALY is equivalent to a QALY to a QALY. That's kind of the assumption. And so QALY does not care about context. All QALYs are considered equivalent. And this, of course, raises many issues, one of which is, you know, equity. And there's so many different perspectives on why this assumption might not be really valid. So for that, we have recently, researchers have proposed the concept of a weighted quali approach, which, you know, where we could weight qualis to reflect the different monetary values that people give to their own health. But again, there are also counter arguments to that approach as well. And so for now, what we see in the literature, what we see in research mostly is the simple quali approach. So the weighted quali is still kind of under research, and we see maybe in research studies being investigated, but it's not widely used compared to the simple quali approach.
Okay, great. Well, I guess in that same vein, can you provide any examples of how progress is being made in Alberta or abroad to measure health-related quality of life?
Well, there's, as you would know, of course, and, you know, being a member of ISPOR, there's been a lot of progress around the world in the field of health and quality of life measurement. And more recently, not only in the use of these instruments for economic evaluations, but also more broadly for, measuring the population or assessing the health of populations, or for use in a clinical practice or clinical applications. And this movement has, you know, happened and is being even moving faster than before with the move towards patient-reported and patient-centered outcomes and patient-centered care. We've seen large-scale applications of these instruments in many countries around the world. So here in Canada, and especially in Alberta, we have been making a lot of progress in health and quality of life measurements. So a few years ago, we've established a research and service unit to support the use of these measures with a particular focus on the EQ5D instrument, because we hold licensing rights for that instrument in the province, but we work with many other instruments as well. And many groups here in the province have implemented these measures and successfully, I should say, implemented these measures, like the Health Quality Council of Alberta, the Alberta Bone and Joint Health Institute, Cancer Control Alberta, and that's just to name a few. Also, I'd like to mention that there is ongoing large-scale implementation of these measures in primary care settings here in the province. So listeners who are interested in learning more about our work here in Alberta and all the projects that are being implemented in the province, they can visit our website, www.apersu.ca. And this stands for Alberta PROMS and EQ5D Research and Support Unit, which is the research unit that I, as I mentioned, manage.
Okay, well, that concludes today's podcast. We will be providing that link for our listeners, www.apersu.ca. I'd like to thank Dr. Fatima Elsaya for her time and insight into the measurement of health-related quality of life. We hope you enjoyed the show, and stay tuned for the next podcast from the ISPOR University of Calgary Student Chapter.